next guest has won 6 Grammy Awards in a career that spans 35 years, and in her 17 albums, she has recorded with some of pop music's brightest stars. Her latest record, How Mercy Looks From Here, features collaborations with James Taylor, Sheryl Crow, Carole King, and Miss Grant's husband, Vince Gill. It has been 10 years in the making, and I'm very happy it's given us the opportunity to have Amy Grant on our show today. Hello.
Hello.
And first of all, congratulations on the great reviews from both the secular and Christian press that this album has been receiving. One critic said, few singers probe issues of the spirit and of the heart with the warmth and intimacy of Amy Grant. I guess that's your goal, right? But do you see this as a departure from your previous work in any ways?
I guess I just see it as a continuation of an artist who's living. You know, I'm a songwriter. I have been since I was 15. And so things that intrigued me to write about or sing about, different musical styles, they're totally different at 52 than they were at 25.
But you were turning out a lot of albums very quickly in the past. Did it really take you all these years to make this one, 10 years?
Well, I was doing some music in the interim, but for the most part it was a compilation with 2 new songs or a best of with 3 new songs. It just had to do with the nature of the recording contracts I had at the time. And also, it takes a lot of sort of pulling away from the daily grind to really invest myself creatively and just the demands of life.
And the demands of life were really heavy at that moment. Both of your parents suffering from dementia at
right.
the same time.
Yes, and I have 3 children now. 3 of our 5 kids are in their 20s, but when they were in their teens, I'm sure they would have loved me to disappear completely, just leave the keys to the house.
So, but that is rare that both parents would start losing their memories at the same time.
I know, and it doesn't run in our family. And I've got to tell you, every time I lose my car keys or forget somebody's name, I go into this sweat thinking, I hope I don't have that.
But you did have your father perform on one of the songs in this album, didn't you?
I did, a song called Our Time Is Now. And it was a real trick. It took 2 trips to the studio. But fortunately, he wasn't singing a lyric because his word is kind of like conversation salad now, his words. But the bass line is bom, 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 which is the same melody as Frère Jacques.
Mm-hmm.
And so 2 different afternoons, we went to the studio and just set up a microphone and got him singing that song.
It's a kind of a way of paying tribute to him.
He has a lovely voice.
Did you grow up in a family where everybody sang?
We did, but not in a performance way. My earliest musical memories are singing in church. And we grew up in a church that didn't even have a piano. So if you weren't singing, it was just silence.
Did your father remember who you were and know what he was doing there when he was recording that?
Well, it's hard to say. He has not said my name in a long time. But the other day, I have 2 daughters that live in New York, and they were both home this past weekend. And he got to see one of them. And anyway, he didn't say her name, but he just kept saying, "You're beautiful. I love you." And tears are streaming down her face. And he said, "Are you okay, honey?" And to me, he was a physician, great bedside manner. And those phrases that someone says over and over again continue coming out. I'm just so glad he wasn't a maniac screamer.
Yes. Some people actually get gentler with Alzheimer's, and some people get angrier. You don't know which way it's going to go. Did you write all of these songs, or at least have a hand in writing them?
I did all but one. The last arrival to the project was a song called Deep As It Is Wide, written by Eric Paisley. I've known the song probably 4 or 5 years, and I just wore him down till he finally agreed to let me sing it, as long as we included Sheryl Crow. So the 3 of us we've turned this song into a conversation.
Why was he reluctant to let you record it?
I think because he wanted to have the first recording. He's a great songwriter, but I had such an attachment to that song Nashville's a songwriting community. Songs are famous in Nashville that have never been recorded and released on a major label.
And also Nashville works differently from the rest of the business, doesn't it? It's like the what New York used to be like in the Brill Building, where there are songwriters who just write songs and then there are singers who sing their songs with producers and A&R men.
Yes.
That's pretty much changed in the rest of the business, where we just assume that everybody has written their own material and pretty much put it together by themselves.
Right. Nashville, really the backbone of the music business is the songwriter. And the little cafe where my husband has breakfast every morning, he says he does it so I won't have to do dishes twice because our 12-year-old has to wake up at the crack of dawn. But I think he does it because it's like the Cheers version of the bar counter. Mm-hmm. It's called Noshville. And every morning there's so many people. There's songwriters on their way to songwriting appointments. And anyway, it's a great community.
I've spoken to a fair number of songwriters. Some of them tell me they get a little germ of an idea, and then it niggles in the back of their head, and they come back to it again and again. Others just sit down, and the whole thing, Neil Young, the whole thing just comes out right in one big spurt. What about you?
I wish it happened for me like it happened for Neil Young.
I think you wrote a whole album one night.
Oh, my goodness. I tend to have the idea that burrows in my head for a long time, sometimes 2 or 3 years, and I'm just waiting for the right context to tell the story. For instance, the title track of this song, How Mercy Looks From Here, I had that song idea, and I just kept waiting for the context in which to tell the story.
I wonder if you'd share a story that you've told about what Sarah Cannon, who's better known in the Grand Ole Opry world as Minnie Pearl, once said to you.
I would love to. I met Sarah Cannon when I was in the 8th grade, and she spoke at the closing exercises of our school. It was a K-8 grade. And I loved that she spoke to us as though we were adults.
Was she talking to you as Minnie Pearl or as Sarah Cannon?
As Sarah Cannon. She was brilliant. And anyway, so I knew her both ways. I'd seen her on stage at the Opry. And then my father had gotten to know her because she struggled with cancer, and there's the Sarah Cannon Cancer Center in Nashville now. But anyway, over time, she became my friend. She wrote me letters many times if she'd seen me in public or on some stage, and always encouraging me, be yourself, love people. And so when I found out I was expecting a baby girl on October 25th, 1992, well, that's her birthday. And I was on my way to Australia when I did the pregnancy test on the plane. It was killing me to leave my 2 older children. And crazy as it sounds, when the dipstick turned the right color, I went, oh, thank God I'm not leaving all of my children. At least I have one little bitty one with me. But when I was about maybe a month away from delivering, I went to see Sarah Cannon. And I wanted to ask her permission to name my daughter for her. And so we talked about all kinds of things. She was bedridden. She had had a stroke a few years before and had good days and bad days. But we were talking about children, and she said, teach her poetry, Amy. Poetry is so important. And one thing led to another. We're discussing the arts. And out of the blue, she says, do you know what the most important color is on an artist's palette? And I said, no. I mean, my sister's a painter. You know, I'm thinking of the Crayola color pack. And I said, is there an important color? I mean, don't they all matter? And she said, child, it's black. She said, without black, there's no depth. But with black, you can make any object seem so real, you could reach out and pick it up. And anyway, that was our last conversation. And I thought, how much like life?
And have you applied that?
I think about it through every hard time. Absolutely, yes.
My guest is Amy Grant, whose latest album, How Mercy Looks From Here, has just been released by Capitol Records. She's been performing tonight at 7 o'clock at Irving Plaza on 15th Street.
And doors open at 7. Music's at 8.
If you want ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Do you think it's a handicap to be labeled a Christian singer instead of just a singer? I mean, you have been called the Queen of Christian Pop. And
wretched title. I think music is all about discovery. And if there's a handicap in labeling something, it's that a listener might have a predisposition to say, I don't like this or that. And if you fall under that label, then they miss the opportunity to discover what you do. And so that's the only thing. I mean, if I'm sitting next to someone on an airplane and they say, what do? I say I'm a songwriter.
Well, you have sold 30 million records, so whatever label they put on you, that hasn't hurt all that much. But how would you define Christian pop as opposed to gospel music?
Well, gospel, whether it's black gospel or southern gospel, is clearly a music tradition. And Christian pop, I think, came about because a lot of very musical people that loved all kinds of popular music just wanted something that reflected their faith. And so, you know, I mean, that's why I started doing what I did. I had all my records from the 60s and 70s that I grew up with, but I had this vibrant spiritual experience at a hippie church in Nashville. And I just thought, I wish there was something of music that I loved with my experience in the lyric. That's where that comes from.
Well, looking at some of the people on this album, you obviously have, you've got more than a friend. Carole King wrote that song. James Taylor recorded it. You got a friend. And they're both on this album with you.
Yes. Dream come true.
Did you just call them? And was the fact that they have a connection a factor in having them on the CD?
Well, the invitations to be guests on the record really came spontaneously as the songs developed. James is singing on a song called Don't Try So Hard. And really the song was nearly finished. And I remember eyes closed, listening to the playback. And I asked the producer, don't you hear just a sparse harmony? Very sparse, but especially on the line, you're lovely even with your scars. And he said, right, I hear that. And to me, casting a backing vocalist is, it's like casting a movie role. Hopefully somebody that brings something to the table. And so...
Well, did you know him? Had you worked with him before?
I had. I'd actually been turned down by James when I asked him in the 90s to sing a song with me. And he said, I would love to. I mean, I've been a fan of his for a long time. And at the time, I sent him a song I had written. And I didn't hear back, and... Finally, I tracked him down, and he said, Amy, this is really not a very good song. And I went, oh, okay, it's off the record starting now. And so 15 years later, you know, I asked him if he would sing again. But his voice, I feel like, is one of the most trusted voices. I wanted to hear him sing to me, You're Lovely with Your Scars. And Carole King and I participated in a benefit with her in December and just asked her after the show, would you sing with me? Life is nice that way.
You don't have to push too hard when you want Vince Gill to appear on one of your recordings.
I just roll over in bed.
He was a guest on our show last time for his Time Jumpers album. Is it weird being married to a musician, or is it good? Is there a time when you're not doing music, or is it always there as part of the mix?
Oh, there are many times it's not there. And I cannot imagine being married to someone that didn't understand this lifestyle and the creative journey. And so, you know, we have a family. We share a lot of interests that are not musical. He's just such a wonderful man.
Whenever we have people who write novels, married couples who write novels, of course, the question is, do you show each other your work?
Mm-hmm.
And some do, some don't.
Right.
What about you?
We definitely show each other our work. We don't work together very often because we tend to like different things. And he's gifted in such a pristine way. And if I had to describe the two of us, I guess I would say he just has a freakishly defined gift. His ears are incredible, what he hears.
So does he suggest things that you could do to improve songs so that
he will,
James
sometimes.
Taylor might want to, might consider being well, on it with you?
I'm stubborn enough to want to find my own way. But my style is more, just give me a roll of duct tape and I can fix about anything. And so even musically, I'm not, perfection is not what matters to me. I think I'm always trying to tell him, just let it be a little more raw. And he's always telling me to be myself.
Well, the 17th album, How Mercy Looks From Here, has just been released by Capitol Records. And Amy Grant will be performing at Irving Plaza on 15th Street tonight. The doors open at 7. She'll be there at 8 with a band.
Yes.
And you can get more information about tickets on our show page at wnyc.org. We're going to go out with that song you did with James Taylor, Don't Try So Hard. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much. And I just want to breathe, because it's a long, long week for someone wired to please. I keep taking my aim, pushing it higher, want to shine bright. Even brighter now. Wish I could tell myself, don't try so hard. God gives you grace and you can't earn it. Don't think that you're not worth it, because you are. He gave you his love and he's not song, so you believe it. You're lovely even with your scars. Don't try.